231. That's the average number of apps used by many companies. This leads to a lot of context and tab switching that drains employee focus and costs your company. Grammarly can help. Grammarly's AI works in over 500,000 apps and websites, making it easy for your team to write clearly and on brand without disrupting workflow. Join 70,000 teams who save an average of $5,000 per employee per year using Grammarly. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we have the pleasurable task of talking about the Ravens defense in that game against the Giants. Joining me to do that is Ed Norris of 105.7. Ed, how you doing?
Doing all right. How are you?
Always a pleasure to talk football with you. I really want to thank you guys again for being, you know, welcoming hosts in terms of sharing the studio with me and come in to do my spots on Tuesday morning. I've had a great deal of fun doing that. Going into this Ravens game, though, absolutely sky-high expectations for this game. It's if the Ravens didn't win 49-0 and, you know, rest their starters the entire second half. And, I mean, it's every expectation is at a ridiculous level.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a team that has Super Bowl aspirations. They still do. The Giants are just a dumpster fire right now. I mean, they're bad to begin. They're a bad football team, and they were severely beaten up coming into this game. Neighbors was hurt. He played, but he was still hurt. They had one of the best defensive tackles in the NFL, in Dexter Lawrence. Mm-hmm. He didn't play. I mean, and shocking, the Ravens still couldn't run on them that well. But I mean, it was Lawrence wasn't in. But that, you know, that man is an absolute force in the middle, and he was out. So that, and then, you know, they're down to their, I don't know what string quarterback now. So they should have done, and they did. They handled it, but they, frankly, should have shut them out. They gave them 14 points. Mm-hmm. So the expectations, they were met, because, I had them winning 31-10, which is a 21-point difference. They ended up winning by 21 points, 35-15. It was 14, excuse me. And so it was the same difference. I mean, that's kind of where I expected it. They were 17-point favorite. They ended up winning by 21. So I think they fulfilled expectations, but they're still – there's still concerns when you face better football teams that I think need to be addressed.
I think I don't disagree with all your comments there, by the way. The first being that they exceeded expectations in a whole bunch of different ways in this game. They came off a bye and they won. Well, you don't win all the time off a bye. You know, Harbaugh's 14-3 coming off the bye in his career. It's the second best record, I think, to Andy Reid of any coach who's coached 10 or more games. And if you talk about them going into a game where they had, I think betting markets were giving them about a 91% chance to win this game, highest I've ever seen for an NFL game when I've actually been monitoring it. But that's that's still exceeding expectations to turn that into 1.00 wins instead of 0.91 wins.
Yeah, no, they did. There was always a chance. I was really kind of hesitant to jump on board with everybody. I picked them to win by a big margin because I think they're a much better football team. But it would have been, even if they would have won, but if they won by one score, I think it would have been disastrous for them going into the play the Steelers. So they did exceed expectations that way. Lamar looked absolutely spectacular. But we'll see. I mean, I still have to temper it with that's a really, really bad football team they faced. Really, they stink on ice. I mean, they're terrible.
I don't disagree. I think we just somehow have overbaked what that really means when you're comparing two NFL teams. And you know, the truth of the matter is, yeah, the Giants are terrible and the Ravens are. The problem is that our own fans can't admit this Ravens team is really a great football team. And they've retaken the number one spot in DVOA now with this win. They are the third most likely to win the Super Bowl, despite the fact that you know, they don't have an easy road to a home playoff game at all. They're still tied with the Lions at 13.8% to win the Super Bowl, according to the FDN projections.
Yeah, and it's funny. I've given up the home playoff games, and I don't care that much anymore. I just want them to make the postseason. They're a good road team anyway. They had home field. Didn't help them last year. So it should be an advantage. I don't know if it always is. I think they're a good road team. I just want to see them make the postseason, and then all things start all over again, and anything's possible. And I just think they just have so much talent, so much talent, that there's really no excuse. They should – I mean, I think the Chiefs are not as good as their record. I'm sorry. I still can't buy into them. Everyone said, you know, well, they still win. It's like the year the Steelers were 11-0, and it's like, nah, that's not an 11-0 team, and it wasn't. And that's how I feel with the Chiefs this year. Mahomes is having a really pedestrian year by his standards, yesterday included. And I don't feel them. I mean, you know, if our receiver had a pair of white cleats on, they would have won that game opening day, you know, instead of having the colored ones that you could see he was out. But
there you go.
Whatever.
Yeah. I'm feeling the same way about the Chiefs team. One thing I think is really underrated about the Ravens currently is I think they've become a top 10 defense in the last few weeks. People are always slow to recognize as well. You wait till playoffs, or let me see another 5 weeks of this. And you don't have that kind of time. You got to make the best projection you can from the current moment in time. And right now, the Ravens have played four outstanding defensive games in a row, and that's really something. They now look like they're one of the better teams in the NFL. There,
they do. It turned around dramatically. I mean, they looked terrible. I had very little hope because I know people say, well, it's an offensive league now, and defense still matters. It still matters. That's how the Chiefs are winning. It's with the defense. And I think defense still matters in the NFL. And the Ravens just look confused, giving up huge plays. The secondary looked like they were completely lost through most of this first half of the season. They said the last four games, they look like a real defense. And I think I don't know what's turned them around. I don't know if Zach Orr turned them around. The addition of Dean Pease has helped maybe. But the things that I saw earlier in the season that were really concerning, particularly in the secondary. When defensive backs are looking at each other and, you know, throwing their hands up, questioning, like, what are you doing? What are we supposed to do here? That's a really bad sign. They've still got some problems in the deep secondary. But I think they've really turned the corner. Frankly, I think Ardarius Washington has made a big difference. He's been incredible. And I've been a fan of his since they picked him up. I learned about him from my son. He should be a scout, that kid. He was telling me, watch this guy. I saw his size. Man, he's really undersized, 5'8", 180. How's he going to, you know, play safety? He's made a huge difference. And now and Kyle Hamilton and him, you know, that seems to be the tandem. We've gone through so much trouble with the safeties this season, releasing one, sitting one. And now he stepped up, and good for him. They gave him the opportunity, he ran with it.
So last Tuesday was in, and we talked a little bit about man defense. And I think it was last Tuesday, you said that the Ravens just look more secure in man defense. They look confused when they are in zone. And I mean, obviously, a lot of that I think we can now pin on the two safeties, one released and one effectively benched. You know, almost banished further than that. But I don't think Marcus Williams is going to play another meaningful snap for the Ravens. I guess it could happen due to injury, but in the case of Eddie Jackson, obviously he's gone. And the two new ones have secured the back end in a way that I did not think would be possible. I thought we heard comments that so much of this was due to over-rotating and over-deceiving opponents with what they were trying to do with the safeties and having, you know, players not buy into that. I think the Ravens have actually been outstanding in a number of elements of deception that they've been undertaken recently. One of them you really notice is they're not giving away their off-ball blitzes the way used to earlier in the season. And that shows in a couple places. The slot corner doesn't cheat and somehow try and get to even with the edge and off his receiver. And you also don't have a linebacker, you know, getting out of his set two-foot stance there to rush downhill at the quarterback before it's time. That really is a big advantage, and people don't realize how important that is. I think they've done really good rotation. We saw one play where it didn't work in this game. Ardarius, on the 25-yard pass over to the right sideline, was rotating down to cover for Humphrey's slot blitz. Mm-hmm. And on that play, he fell down. And so it ended up that it wasn't Neighbors. I think it was Wandell Robinson, right, got behind him. I think that's right.
Yeah, but it is, and I do, and I felt that they're much better in man because it requires less thinking. Mm-hmm. You know, I got that guy. You know, I'll take number one, and it's just simpler for these guys who were confused, and I didn't quite understand why, but it was pretty evident that they were. But that's been cleaned up because I'm not a big fan of man coverage when you're not securing it, because you saw what happened. They were giving up not just – the seams weren't open. There was no one in the television shot with some of these guys. I mean, you watch the game on TV and there's nobody. There's only the receiver is visible. Like, where is everybody? So, I mean, they really were completely lost at one point. And I just think they've definitely tightened that up. And it just looks like a much better defense. And it's, you know, it's showing. They did well against – they didn't give a touchdown to the Steelers. Not one. They lost on field goals. Just, you know, you look back at this season and there's so many games that they – I hate to say this. It's not like, you know, an Uber fan. They should have won. Mm-hmm. It'd be a dropped interceptions or excessive, you know, penalties. They've even yesterday's game with the Giants, they seem to just basically – what, they have four penalties on that drive where the Giants scored? They gave them every opportunity to get into that end zone, and they shouldn't have. That's got to be – and I don't know how you clean that up at this stage of the season, but that's got to be fixed.
Yeah, I mean – it does. You would like it to be fixed, but this is where I'm not real crazy about declarative statements. You probably get a lot of this on the radio from your callers and whatnot. Say the Ravens won't win it with this kind of penalty. You know, this kind of penalty rate in the playoffs. They can't beat good teams. I don't think you could do that. It's a disadvantage to have that kind of a penalty rate, and you certainly wouldn't want it to go any higher than that in a, you know, in a game where you might be even more prone to it against a quarterback who's trying to do something. But if you look back at the 1970s Raiders, they overcame that. Doesn't mean you build your team that way, but they overcame that with other good elements of the play. And the Ravens have the best, most precise offense in the entire NFL. And they have a good defense overall that has provided a lot of opportunity. And you know what? What I've really liked about the secondary recently, they had some penalties in this game, obviously, that take you in the other direction on this. They've really outperformed the opportunity set given to them by the pass rush. So the pass rush has done just okay. They had a really good game this game against the Giants, which we'll get to later. But the opportunity set that they provided opposing quarterbacks, the secondary has improved upon that each of the last 4 weeks. So that's been really nice to see.
Well, they have. I'm a little disappointed in the pass rush, though, I got to say, because they did it last season by leading the league in sacks. Mm-hmm. They didn't really have a marquee pass rusher. I mean, Van Noy had a good season, so did Clowney. But they don't have a TJ Watt. You know, they don't have a Dexter Lawrence. They don't have those guys, you know, on this team. And they still got it done somehow. However, they did look pretty good yesterday against but that offensive line the Giants line is terrible. They have a lot of problems. That's one of them, that offensive line. So that's why, I mean, the pass rush did look good. I think Pierce coming back was a tremendous help.
Yep.
I think he gained another 50 pounds looking at him, but whatever. He's enormous, but his presence was definitely felt.
Yeah, he does look like he should not be playing at that weight. It almost looks like the weight where he got thrown off the field when he came back for practice that one summer. Mm-hmm. And they said, yes. Oh, just come back at, you know, in camp and be lighter kind of thing. Yes. But he was athletic out there. I mean, he's getting after the quarterback and you know, chasing down, I guess it might've been Tracy or might've been Robbins even on the jet motion left play. That was a good tackle. Yeah. I thought his return was absolutely enormous for the Ravens. They are looking forward to a basically a rest of the season in the playoffs as far as they last. where if they can keep those two guys healthy, Pierce and Jones, they'll have one of them on the field every single play of the year. At least every play they want to have one. Let's put it that way. And they are absolutely a dynamic duo. The Jones and Matabike tandem is really made for each other in terms of the stunts they can do together. They have them on passing downs. But Pierce, who plays mostly rundowns, just outstanding early down pass rusher as well in terms of morphing that pocket.
Yeah, I don't know how he moves the way he does with that weight, but he does. and Matabike is fine. I mean, I think he's really lived up to his expectations. He's come into his own, so really happy with his play. I think the question I would have is, what's up with Trenton Simpson?
Yeah.
You know, I had higher expectations for him. I liked his speed. I thought he played some safety in college. I thought he'd be a lot better than he's shown this year.
We can talk about that now if you want to. There's been a number of shuffles at inside linebacker for this game. And obviously Simpson didn't show up in the game until the last five snaps.
Yeah.
And who showed up before him? Okay, Roquan Smith played basically the whole game until he left. Malik Harrison played 42 snaps at inside linebacker and 7 at outside linebacker, which is very, by the way, can't even begin to explain in today's NFL game, the body types are so different.
Yeah.
Inside linebackers getting lighter, outside linebackers, they're trying to be more like Terrell Suggs and play heavier. And you don't have guys playing both of those positions. It's really unusual, but Harrison has done a very good job with that. Then Chris Board plays 22 snaps, on the back end. And then Kristen Welch shows up on a 4th-and-1 snap and Simpson doesn't.
Yeah.
Something is really wrong. So anyway, it was Simpson not getting in until the end of the game. They've been kind of tipping their hand a little bit in this direction the last 3 weeks, I think, because they've been alternating Board and Simpson for complete series as opposed to just specialized down and distances, which you might do, and we've often seen with platoon linebackers.
Yeah, I've always liked Board. I liked him the first go around because he's got some of the stuff that I liked in Simpson, like speed. You know, Board's pretty quick, and I think he's shown well. Harrison has been, I think, playing above expectations every time I've seen him, so I'm very happy with him. And Roquan, he didn't look as good as usual, but he had a good game. Mm-hmm. I thought he was still he just didn't look as quick off the ball as he usually does. But there's a lot of reasons. It's late in the season. Who knows how he's feeling? If he's a little banged up or just didn't feel so great. Still had a good game. So I'm pretty happy with them. And again, you know, the guys we just talked about, the interior linemen, having those guys back and having Pierce healthy helps the linebackers immeasurably. And I think you're going to see a lot of good linebacker play now because of that. Because they take so much pressure off and let them go, you know, sideline to sideline and do what they have to do.
Yeah, it definitely – Pierce is an enormous player for this team. It just he was great last year. He was actually the guy they started the year being their main pass rush pairing for Matabike on third down. And they've now gone really 2 full years where they almost do not use those rush looks where they put in a third outside linebacker to replace one of two offensive linemen. They don't really use that anymore at all. They've used it, you know, a handful of times this year, and I'm going to say 20 maybe the whole season. Last year they used it maybe a little bit more than that, maybe 40 times the whole year, 4% of snaps or something. But it's something now they're just committed to what the interior defensive lineman brings in the pass rush, in supporting and morphing that pocket. And it really showed up yesterday. Pierce, among other plays, DeVito was flushed, I think, initially by Owe. No, that's not right. It might have been Van Noy originally, but pushed up in the pocket anyway. And Pierce got a hand of him. He wasn't able to make the tackle because he got blocked off the player by, I think, Stinney, the right guard. But then that gave Ajabo, I think it was, time to come in and make the sack. So great set of plays.
I've always liked the guys who get pressure up the middle. I mean, Aaron Donald obviously set the bar for that. But it's because what happens, even casual fans will recognize this. When you're getting pressure on the outside, the normal reaction to the quarterback is to step forward into a pocket that has been formed, you know, and hopefully the tackles can push them a little further back or push them all the way back. But if you can't step up, and they couldn't step forward yesterday, I mean, they had a tough time stepping up when the pocket was, you know, collapsing. That's your interior lineman. It makes all the difference in the world because there's no way for them to go. And some of the guys like Brett Urban was very, he knocks down a lot of passes.
Yep.
He really does.
Player.
Really unsung hero on this team. I guess it's his height. He's around 6'7", but he gets his hands on a lot of passes and knocks him down.
What you talked about earlier was really worth even a little bit more inspection, I think. So what I'd say is basically, if the quarterback wants to step up, first of all, that's the direction of his throw. So it's more natural for him. Doesn't have to change his eyesight at all to go in there. And he usually is much better at finding the good throwing lane that's available to him by stepping just a little bit to the left or right and stepping forward. The two directions you want a quarterback to move, and I'm talking about a right-handed quarterback, number one is to the left. Anytime you get a right-handed quarterback moving left, it's death. Okay. Yeah. Particularly if the guy is not one of the new breed of these, you know, almost like a Lego piece or something where they can completely turn their waist and throw the football, like Mahomes or like Jackson to a lesser degree, probably. But the other way is back. And we've seen Lamar Jackson. He's made some incredible plays moving back, avoiding pressure. Then he moves up again and usually makes a play by doing it that way. But back is not a direction you want to be moving as a quarterback. It does not usually improve your sight lines.
No, because you want to step into your throws. If you move backward, you can't. And you don't want to go left either if you're a right-handed quarterback, as you said. So, yeah, I mean, that's the way you want to keep these guys moving. I think they did a great job at that. You got Russell Wilson this weekend, though, so that's a different story.
All right, we'll see. We'll see what he brings to the table. A little bit on the Ravens playoff odds, a little bit. There's that 39.7% to play in the AFC Championship game. This is all according to the DVOA projections. 23.9% to play in the Super Bowl, 13.8% to win the Super Bowl. Now, if you're a math guy and you just heard me say those numbers, you'd say exactly what I did, which is that means they have a better than 50% chance to win each of those games as they go along the road. And I'm looking at that and saying, you know, the Ravens have a good chance to be playing on the road in at least the AFC Championship game. They almost certainly will be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Super Bowl at a neutral site versus a set of pretty decent NFC hopefuls out there with the Lions and the Eagles, in the mix. Their projection system really likes the Ravens, is all I'll say about DVI, but very positive about it. And I think there's a certain amount of positivity that I just want from Ravens fans that's different from what I'm hearing. I think it's natural to worry as a fan. I just think they are so over worried about this team.
Yeah, dude. I think it's part of the city's culture. For one, I really do. It's just this woe is me attitude we have here. But I mean, they forget that the Ravens, they've been favored. They're going to be favored in every game going forward, favored against the Steelers. This is a really good football team, and I think people forget how good they are. They look at Tucker having, the lowest percentage, field goal percentage in the league this year, or kicking percentage. They're looking at the problems. We're looking at the defense initially, some coaching blunders here and there, with clock management and calling timeouts you don't have and things like that. But you got to take the 10,000-foot view and look at this team and how talented it is. I mean, the team is loaded, particularly on offense. I mean, I don't think people are used to it is part of the problem, where you're so used to having, really good defenses and okay offense. And then you bring Lamar in and he brings a whole nother dimension. But now you've got a lot of talent on this team. You've got not just Lamar. You've got, obviously Derrick Henry. I think Justice Hill doesn't get enough credit for what he brings and the special teams, pass blocking, catching passes out of the backfield. He can do a lot of different things. And the receiving core, Mark Andrews is back. I don't know what happened to him early in the season, but all of a sudden he's looking like his old self. Zay Flowers, Bateman looked like a star yesterday. A lot of had to do with Lamar. The pass was spot on. But this is a really good team. I just think that sometimes I think the fan base is a little bit spoiled because they're so used to the Ravens being good most years. They go to playoffs more often than not. They went to the AFC Championship last year. And there's still, a lot of people's favorites to win the Super Bowl right now. I just think fans do this a lot. I think they're just kind of they get negative, so they're not disappointed.
Oh well, that's probably too. I was going to say, as soon as this is true, more of I think other teams' fans is they raise the bar on the player or the team once they've hit it. So like Lamar Jackson, when he first was breaking out in 2019, they kept raising the bar. And well, he's got to do it. He's got to do it versus this team. He's got to do it versus established quarterbacks. He's got to win. And, they've got to take his team to a marquee record. They've got to be the number one seed. Got to beat quarterbacks in the playoffs. And, they just kept raising the bar until obviously you can keep doing that until anybody feels it. So it then becomes a knock test. Have you ever seen the movie The Recruit? There's a knock test they have where they capture – a pair of people or pretend to anyway, and they put them in separate rooms and they torture the hell out of them to get the information they want out of them, and then they just find out that it's a test and they want to see how far they could keep up the thing. But everybody fails in the end is the idea. Well, and you could make that happen if you want to raise the bar on Lamar ever and ever and ever and ever, feel fine to do it. But this is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and you really should be enjoying the ride if you're here right now.
See, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time having one of the greatest years of all time. Yep. I mean, you could argue that he's only thrown three picks this year, and each of those hit receivers in the hands. So you could always bring that up, and he could have an absolutely spotless record with it. He's thrown more touchdowns already than his MVP year, the first time. Mm-hmm.
With a 36, and fewer interceptions.
And fewer interceptions. And he could absolutely have zero, but there were a couple of drops that could have been, so I don't want to go there. But he's having an incredible year. He's having a year that's better than either MVP season right now. And I hope people are enjoying this, because he's going to be one of those guys, 10 years from now, when he's all done with his NFL career, you're going to be able to say, yeah, I saw him play. I remember that season. I saw him do that. It was incredible. I hope people are appreciating what they're seeing. It was forget his stats, which are otherworldly right now. He's having a better year than the other people always in the conversation, like Mahomes and Allen and guys like that. So statistically, he's having an incredible season. But more than that, he's passed the eye test for me, where I'm not used to seeing him hit people so on the money. They didn't have to come back for anything. They didn't have to stop their stride. He hit them in stride, in the hands, over defenders, on a string, no wobble to the football. He looks like an elite NFL quarterback in the throwing aspect of his game, which he did not always.
Yeah, that's certainly true. The plays yesterday that really got me, there were a couple of them. There were Bateman got open three times deep, and he hit him once. The left corner of the end zone, I thought, was an absolutely remarkable pass by Lamar. The first one, really any competent NFL quarterback should have been able to hit that one. Bateman was so far wide open. It should have been a touchdown, and it was. And the last one, he actually underthrew the ball slightly, almost got intercepted, frankly, on the play. Mm-hmm. But there he didn't lead Bateman enough. And I'm not trying to create a balance in this situation, but his best throw of the day, I thought, was the one to Tez Walker, because that had a very limited window in terms of its trajectory, where it had to come down and whatnot. And Walker was just able to toe tap in bounds. And that to me was probably the best throw. And Walker was open. It's just there wasn't that much room
before
Walker got to the end line. Yeah.
Yeah. In the throw to Andrews, it was just like, it was surgical. It was just, it's exactly what you want to see. Andrews, just hit a little seam, had a little bit of room, and bang, he put it right where it needed to be. So I'm really happy with his play yesterday. And I'm not going to keep saying how awful the Giants are. They're an NFL football team. So, you're still playing against the best athletes in the world at this sport. So.
Yeah, I know. I remember Mike Preston once saying that his semi-pro team could beat the Cleveland Browns one year. And I'm thinking, that is really not a smart thing to say. No. It's just not the kind of thing you want to put on air.
That's all these guys used to say that about Alabama. Oh, Alabama could beat them. Yeah. No, they can't. Yeah. They can't. Because Alabama has a couple of guys going to the NFL. The Browns have all guys going to the NFL.
Yeah.
It's a big difference.
Yeah. Another thing that I think really bodes well for the Ravens right now is their team health. Obviously, they're going into a very, very difficult stretch of games here. The good news is the other teams they face have to go through the same things. The Steelers actually have to play on the road on short rest against the Ravens. And I think it's reflected in the 6.5-point spread we're seeing. But, TJ Watt just rolled his ankle. I'm sure he'll be fine, and he'll play against the Ravens. I'm sure he'll play against the Ravens. I'm not sure he'll be fine. But they're going through a rough stretch physically as well. And the Ravens are just their current health status, knock on wood, is among the best in the entire NFL.
It is. And these short weeks, when you have home field, it's a tremendous advantage. It's like Thursday night games. You'll watch teams who were probably on any other game day. If it was a Sunday, they'd probably not win those games. But sometimes you see inferior teams actually win on Thursday night because they have a tremendous advantage on short weeks like this. And now the Ravens have this with the Steelers coming to town. So I'm pretty happy about this. And I really do feel confident they're going to win this game.
Okay. Well, that's good. I do too. The last thing I wanted to hear from you about, oh, we got one other thing we need to talk to after this, but I want to hear from you about the, about maybe some of the callers that are calling in. If you don't want to rat on them, just things you think you're sensing or hearing from your many antenna that are out there in terms of the Baltimore sports watching world. I think I hear a lot of declarative statements made, and I think back to the 2000 team, and let's make up our declarative statements because we can probably come up with about 20 in about 2 minutes. But the first is, no team is going to win the Super Bowl when they can't score a touchdown in the month of October. You're not going to win in the play. You know, you're not going to win when your field goal, when your kicker is your best offensive player. You're not going to win with Trent Dilfer and, you know, Banks basically splitting your starts for the team.
I remember that season well. It's funny, my late father came down and took him to a game, and there was something about them, the same thing. That when you're looking at people, you see they're passing, you know, I like to call it just the eye test. We're like, nah, this team is special. I remember telling my father, I took him to a Ravens game down here. I said, this team's going to the Super Bowl this year. He laughed. He goes, oh, come on. They can't even score. I'm like, nah, they're going to the Super Bowl. And sure enough, they went and won, and they beat the Giants, coincidentally, you know, 34-7. And they didn't even give up an offensive touchdown. There was a special teams touchdown they gave up. They just shellacked them. And I can see them doing that to somebody right now. Especially now the defense has come around like this, because the offense is, there's no question they can score on anybody. There's no defense that can hold them back. I think the Eagles may have the best defense in the league right now. So if they face them, that'll be another story. But other than that, I'm not particularly worried. And I just think that they've got, like I say, that's just so loaded. If they have to score 41 points to win, say they face the Lions or a team like that, we saw yesterday with Buffalo. Yeah, they can do that. They absolutely can do that.
I like their chances to win a shootout game like that in either the first round game at Houston, if they get that, or possibly in Baltimore. Well, that's very weather dependent. I'm much more concerned about them winning a game like that in Kansas City, where it'll be cold, or in Buffalo, where you don't even know what you're getting in terms of wind and snow and whatnot. Buffalo's building a new stadium, but they're planning in the planning process. I don't know when they're actually going to break ground or if they have already. But they don't want a dome. They want to stay with outdoor football because they know what an advantage it is.
Tremendous advantage
to play at home there.
Yeah, I mean, I played in that weather. You know, it's, I'm like, I played in Rochester, New York, so it's an hour from Buffalo, and that's where the Bills practice actually. Mm-hmm. Their facilities in Rochester, so it's very close. It's like going from, you know, Baltimore to Westminster essentially. It's about, you know, 45 minutes, an hour away. The weather
got a little bit difference in lake effect snow between those two places, right?
You do. Rochester is further north, actually, and Buffalo's west of Rochester. Rochester's on Lake Ontario. The Bills, they have Erie. They have, you know, they kind of have the both. They're close to Ontario, but they have the other lake going there, and they tend to get more snow. Rochester's just brutally cold, and it's snow. It's the same. It's essentially the same weather. It was one of those things where it snows literally 8 months. You know, I remember leaving college in May, and it was that snow flurries, and they always, people just joke that you hope summer falls on a Saturday up there
because you don't get much. RPI, or where did you go to school there?
University of Rochester, U of R.
U of R. Okay. I went to Syracuse, so we're in that kind of the nexus of the lake effect snow area there, but not nearly as bad as Buffalo.
No, Syracuse is the snowiest campus in the United States. People think it's Wisconsin or Michigan. It's not. It's Syracuse, New York. I just don't really. People think of New York, they think of New York City. That state is so, it's a polar hell. I mean, that's why they have the Olympics in Lake Placid. That's why you see the Bills have fans shoveling snow to get ready for a game. It's just, that's a really cold, cold place with a ton of snow.
All right. Now, we had some news come out just before the show that this is, I mean, I must have to laugh reading this. That Deontay Johnson and the Ravens have mutually agreed that he will be excused from team activities this week.
This
Anything
week,
to say
huh?
about that?
I think he's going to be excused.
Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. so she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Some team activities for the rest of his career here. I just think that, you know, if they didn't have a reason to hold on to him, he'd be gone already. So you can't do what he did and expect to play or have any, even his teammates aren't have any confidence. You don't do that stuff.
He did it to his teammates in a lot of ways. He did it to the fans too. And I really don't appreciate that, but I know he's playing in a contract year and whatnot, but he's a two-time loser playing a contract year, and he's already really gotten his third strike this year already.
Yeah.
So I don't know what he thinks he's going to get in terms of a contract. The notion that the Ravens were going to get a comp pick for him is just absurd.
Yeah. Now and I don't know what he's thinking, because if you don't play, you're not really in a contract year because no one's going to pay you. Mm-hmm. So this is the best he's probably going to do, and now he's not playing here. So I think he sealed his fate when he did that. And that's, you know, play stupid games, win stupid prizes. So that was a really dumb decision on his part.
That's a good one. I know you wanted to steal my whole sock puppet kind of thing when I use it as a verb, but play stupid games, get stupid prizes is a good one also.
Yeah, and that's exactly what he did. And then now he's going to pay for it. So.
All right, we've been banging on Deontay Johnson on this show for long enough, so I kind of want to let it go at this point. But percentage chance after this week with this new announcement, I was at about 40% that he might play a meaningful snap again. I'm lower than that now. I'd have a tough time setting it. But where would you be
with him?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd say the chance of slim to none. He plays a meaningful snap. Mm-hmm. I don't think, especially knowing Harbaugh the way I just. That kind of stuff doesn't sit well with him, and he doesn't suffer fools, so he's not gonna play.
All right, I would agree on that. All right, well, let's move on a little bit. Did want to talk. We talked about the inside linebackers a little bit, so I think we've been through that. Had some other general thoughts. The Ravens had an outstanding record. If you look in the game book, they allowed only 2 of 12 to the Giants on third down. But that comes with a little bit of a realization here that does not include penalties.
Right. Yes.
And so they allowed 3 of 5 on fourth down. So they converted already 5 of the 12 times that they got the third down. But then they also allowed 4 penalty conversions on third down.
Yeah, the penalties killed them yesterday. I mean, thankfully, they played a really inferior opponent. I don't think we had such good fortune against somebody who was competent, but you can't do what they're doing and consistently. And that goes back to, you know, my questions with the secondary, where Brandon Stevens just driving me crazy this season. Mm-hmm. You know, he seems like he can run with anybody. He never turns around. And when he does, he's holding. So he got called for PIs. And I don't like what I see in the secondary, because those things will kill you. And it's still a spot foul. This isn't college. So it's not like you're going to get a 15-yard penalty. So if you do it 30 yards down the field, that's where the ball goes. Yeah. And you really can, you know, kill your team by doing this. I don't know. And again, how do you correct this at this point in the season? They know they're not supposed to do it anyway.
They've got one move that they can make that might correct it, and that's if they decided they're going to make Brandon Stevens a safety. Now, they played him there yesterday, so it was the emergency plan for him to be the extra safety. Hamilton, first of all, went out for a couple of plays, and he went back to safety, and then he left the game early in the fourth quarter, and Stevens went back there for the rest of the game. To me, if Stevens looking at the football, I would think is going to be a much better opportunity for him to play. That doesn't mean he knows everything about playing safety at this point in his career, though he's played all over, certainly between SMU and here. I'm just surprised that it's not on the table at all, because they have some pretty decent options at corner. I mean, I think getting Wiggins out there on the outside every down would be just fine. I think, you know, getting Humphrey not competing for snaps with anybody is good. You know, you can get another slot corner if you want to move somebody else in there. Could even be King, maybe, or it could just be you even go back to Hamilton there.
Hamilton has flexibility to bring him back. He does really well in the slot, which surprised me because he's so tall. And you know, some of these slot receivers are these twitchy 5'10" guys that are very tough to keep up with out of the slot. But he does a really good job, and I like Wiggins. I can't. Sometimes I look at him, I was like, how does he play this game at that level? He's so thin. But he does, and I like him a whole lot. So I have no problem with him on the outside. I like the new safety tandem. They've got to stop with the holding penalties. I think what you said about him, Stevens facing the quarterback, looking at the ball, I think that would help him a lot, actually. Because the biggest problem he seems to have is when he's running with a receiver down the field playing corner, and you're taught. I mean, I didn't play in the NFL, but I did play college, you know, that was a safety. And you're taught in coverage, as soon as the receiver looks, you look and you got to track that football because you're going to lose every 50-50 ball if you don't do that. If you don't turn around, you're probably going to get flagged, or you're going to lose the football and you're going to lose that disputed catch. So, and he just can't seem to do that. I think it'd be easier if he was actually looking and playing, you know, don't let anybody, as they always say, you know, nobody gets over the top of you. It might be better suited for him.
Yeah, he's the most vulnerable guy also to back shoulder throws. So it's really a double-edged sword. Is, you know, if you throw over him, you often, you know, keep a good chance to get a penalty. And if you throw a back shoulder, he can't react to it the way a cornerback is looking back at the ball. This is why I really like zone defense. And you know, the whole notion that the Ravens can like switch to playing man, they can't. I mean, the teams that play the most man in the entire NFL play it about 30% of the time. So teams play zone primarily regardless. But if in terms of playing zone, one of the advantages you have is that everybody is watching the same movie. Okay, what I mean by that, everybody is looking back into the backfield at the football. Yeah, you got other things to watch, but it means you have all kinds of multiple and second man to the ball opportunities, and they can be great turnover opportunities. So it can be a guy's getting overthrown, you're watching from the back end, you're in position with a loose bracket to try and catch that football. It can be that two guys are converging on the ball, and you know, based on the left or right or however the team coaches it, they know what player is going to try and strip and which player is going to try and tackle. And see, if all these advantages by having multiple people looking at the play from the same direction, which makes zone the predominant defense in the NFL, predominant over man anyway in the NFL now.
Yeah, well, and it also helps in a lot of ways. It helps in that way. It also helps because sometimes you've got somebody who's at you know, you get a Tyreek Hill, somebody like that. It's tough to cover him. I don't care who you are. You know, not many people can keep up with him unless you want to convert Lamar to cornerback. So to keep up with him on a nine route, it's going to be extraordinarily difficult, but you can in zone. And that's why I think a lot of teams use it because, you know, sometimes people fall in love with the underwear Olympics. They just go by combine numbers and who runs a 4.3 40 versus the guy who runs a 4.5. It doesn't really matter. It's how fast you play on the field. And sometimes these guys with tremendous track speed just don't play that fast. And some guys who don't really they know how to play football.
And that's especially true at safety, where it's much more about instincts, because that first step is worth 0.2 or 0.3 seconds off your 40 time in terms of how much faster you can be the football. Hamilton's not a fast guy.
Absolutely not.
You know, and he's a great instinct player who can still get to the right spot very quickly.
Yeah, he's a perfect example. But a lot of safeties are. Very few safeties have that kind of cornerback speed or the wideout speed that you see a lot of guys in the NFL have now.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Giants in this game. Their game plan was really built around getting the ball out quickly. I think, you know, people have judged the pass rush harshly. I'd like to kind of understand what your callers are saying about the pass rush this week. But when you got two guys, DeVito and Boyle, who are already really worried about getting sacked, are getting rid of the ball so quickly, mm-hmm. It's not. You kind of have to almost take those out of the denominator as far as pressures as a percentage of total pass plays. And just look at the relationship between how many 3-second pockets you're giving up and how many times you're really pressuring the quarterback within that time.
Yeah. And I mean, I like that, because I'm glad you think that way, because we have a lot of discussion on the show and with the callers where it's, you know, if you don't bring them to the ground, it wasn't effective. And that's not true at all. I think it matters how much time a quarterback has. It matters how much you make him move and throw off balance and throw on the run. And all these things matter. And that's something that, I mean, thankfully they keep stats on this now, because of guys like you and others, it just, you know, actually break these games down as far as, you know, how much time quarterbacks have to throw, how many times they're under duress, how many times, you know, did they get pressures. And it matters a lot. And the Ravens are doing a pretty good job at that right now. Which helps your secondary, because that's the best way to bolster secondaries with a lot of pressure.
It's like pitching and defense.
Yeah. I mean, if you bring up somebody who brought back the Raiders in the 70s, you remember the Vikings in the same era, mm-hmm. that they had a tremendous pass rush and kind of a mediocre secondary, and their safeties in the Hall of Fame, because it was just
all Kraus.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because of that, you know, they had such tremendous pressure and very little time to throw, and they threw a lot of bad balls, and he was able to, you know, take advantage of it.
Yeah. He was the guy, I think he's the guy with 84, right, that Reed was chasing. So I know he had 12 really late in his career, and that might not be right. He might have 12 and 64. Anyway, I digress. The big Giants target in this game, obviously Malik Nabers, and I did draw two DPIs, but they really just spam targets to him at this point. They're looking to throw to him on a lot of plays. It's not necessarily long stuff. 5.9 yards per target in this game, 6.4 for the season. Mm-hmm. That's not a guy who's really got the he's getting a lot of marginal targets that he probably should not get.
Right. But he's the only player they have right now. Yeah. And I think that, I wouldn't, you know, if the two quarterbacks yesterday for the Giants, if they had 30 to 40 attempts, they should throw the Nabers 30 times, because they had nothing else going on yesterday. So that's why I say, and Nabers, you can tell he still wasn't himself. He was limping around and he still didn't look healthy.
So this is a little bit like a couple of years ago when Jackson really was over targeting Mark Andrews by so much. The Ravens didn't have a lot else in terms of receivers on the team. And, you know, they had maybe Hollywood at the time I'm thinking about. And Andrews had, if you look at his passer rating year over year and how that was just, it was a ski slope heading, you know, obviously heading downhill. That's the way ski slopes go. But but really good year in 18 and then again in 19, but then really tailed off terribly. And it wasn't until they really reduced tight end targets and Lamar is spreading the ball now better that Andrews has gone up in terms of effectiveness as a receiver.
Well, that's kind of what I'm really happy to see, is they really are feeding everybody now. Mm-hmm. Where you're seeing Bateman get into it, and Andrews is back. He's getting his share. Flowers, of course, is your true number one now, looking like the receiver we had drafted. But, I mean, at this, the fact that they're actually feeding people and using guys out of the backfield, I don't think they ever did that really effectively. Mm-hmm. But I think Justice Hill is a real, really good at catching passes. He, I think he had 61 yards in receiving yards yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, he looked terrific. Now, one of the coverage breakdowns by the Giants was, you know, him basically with nobody in the same
wide open
on that right side of the field. Yeah. But one of the things I've really liked about Hill is they used him a lot as a pass blocker this year, which he's okay at. He tries really hard, yeah. and he's a physical attempts to really stop people, and will try and figure out how a bigger man he's going to try and be able to block him. But the Ravens, I think, are better suited when they reduce his number of chip and set blocking responsibilities, because out in the flat, he's a wizard at finding the right spot to be in and knowing where those other guys are. And you just don't have the same ability to get all that recognition down if you have to first plant yourself in the rib cage of a edge defender before you get to go into your route.
Yeah, and he's not a very big guy, but I that's why I kind of admire the fact he makes such an effort to pass block, because he's not Derrick Henry. He's not Pat Ricard by any stretch. This is a guy you're talking to who's about under 200 pounds, maybe 5'10". I run into him quite a bit locally. I see him at Life Med, actually, and I got to talk to him, and he's a really grounded guy. I just came to like him personally. And I'm not surprised to see that he makes such an effort to improve his game as a pass blocker, despite his size. So he may not be great at it, but I do admire the fact he really tries.
He's a good signing for the Ravens. They got him for two more years now on the extension they just signed during the season here. And he's the kind of player who could be around the NFL for a long time, even after his speed declines slightly. Because I think he's going to be a guy who still is a very efficient receiver. After he got, and we saw Larry Centers and Dave Meggett and a whole bunch of other players from the distant past who could hang around long after the speed was gone.
Yeah, they do other things like learn how to be a knuckleballer when you're a pitcher in the Major League Baseball. You lose your fastball, but they certainly place you. And again, it comes down to you don't have to run a 4.240 to be successful in this league. It's about football smarts, the experience you gain, and the techniques you've honed over these years. We can still be really effective at playing football, and just I can see him. And he's actually turned into a really good special teams player too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not returning kicks, I guess, as much as he used to, but he's a fine guy to get down the field on punts and on coverage, and you need those guys. Those are the ones that are a little more scarce. All right, let's. What do I want to talk about? Oh, nice to have all the interior defensive linemen back, but the big five being back. And we talked about Pierce, but all five of them seem to contribute with Pierce back. It's like you changed a parking lot puzzle and moved around, and all of a sudden, all five pieces are more effective. It's not just that one of them. The return of Pierce itself had a lot of value, but it wasn't as much as the sum of all the parts.
Yeah, no, and I think, and you see that with guys like Pierce, and that's why I was so happy to see him return yesterday, because it's better than some of the parts. I mean, the sum is better than individual parts, but you saw that when Roquan came onto the team, where all of a sudden the whole defense played better because now you have an elite player that plays at a very high level, and everyone around him got better, including Patrick Queen, but all the defense did. I think Pierce does that as well, because now the linebackers can play better. The guys on to his left and his right are going to play better on the guys with the hands in the dirt. I just think he adds way more than just what he does in his particular position.
Right. There were also they had some out of position issues on the defensive line itself, where Washington is kind of playing some nose tackle in certain situations, and he's more suited to playing a three or even a five on some snaps when they want to put in a base defensive three down lineman. All of the individual pieces. Urban's back to playing where he should on the line of scrimmage because of it. Matabike and Jones always get to be the pairing instead of messing it up somehow. Oh, there was one really interesting one in this game. Don't know if you caught it, but there was one play, and it was the 4th-and-1 Wildcat that they ran by Tracy. Okay, that the one play where they got the first down. Pierce and Jones were in the game together. It's happened occasionally in jumbo and goal line situations like that. First time I can ever remember it happening with a nickel defense. And it's something I've always wanted to say. I've always wanted to say, yeah, boy, they did that with Brandon Williams and Michael Pierce when he first came into the league, when Pierce was a rookie, and they played Pierce, stayed with him on the nose, and they moved Brandon Williams to 3-tech. That pairing was unbelievably powerful when they did. I just thought that they would try more of that. I really want to see one of them always on the field every single play, but just have a few snaps where they just get to beat up on the opposing offensive line that way.
Yeah, and I think it's they came back at the right time too, because now we miss them a lot, you know, the time in their absence. But now you have everybody back. Makes a tremendous difference, especially now going through the stretch. I always said, you know, season doesn't start till Thanksgiving. Well, now we're in the middle of December, and now it's crunch time, and you have these guys back, particularly when it's supposed to be very cold. I mean, I don't trust weather predictions the night before, never mind 6 days in advance. Mm-hmm. But they're talking about a really cold, windy day for this next game, which means they may not be, you know, throwing, maybe, you know, challenging. So you want these guys to really stuff the run, and I'm pretty optimistic that they will. If the Steelers decide to go that way.
Looks like 36 for a high, 24 for a low. I'm trying to get wind, because that to me is the big thing.
Yeah.
I got 11 miles per hour for wind. Now, that I really wouldn't trust this far in advance, yeah. but that's the thing that really bothers me for Lamar is can he be as effective? And any way you look at it, wind is not good for the Baltimore Ravens if they're playing anybody.
No. No, it's not. It's the toughest thing to play in. You can play in snow. You can play in rain. Wind is the most difficult element to play in, especially in the northern city, like the cities like us and Pittsburgh and above, and of course Buffalo. It makes it really, really difficult to play in a windy game. And I heard different predictions about the wind. It's supposed to be really blustery for this game. But again, it's a long way off. It's still 5 days, 5-6 days away.
Right. Some of these January playoff games that have been played here, I think the one against Tennessee, it ended up being the 60s, I think. It was 63 degrees or something for that game. Let's see. What else we got going on here? Let's move over to some package stuff. I'll go fairly quickly through this, and then I have a few overarching thoughts. One snap of Jumbo on the 2-yard Tracy wildcard snaps. They play wildcat snap. They played 5 snaps of base, 10 yards, 2.0 yards per play. Obviously, that's not a big deal. They didn't play any big nickel, and they really can't at this point because they don't have a third safety. So they'd have to decide that they were willing to put Stevens there at some other point in the game to allow Hamilton to come up. The Giants had some 12 personnel. They actually played very light in this game, but they had some 12 personnel, and it would have been helpful there. Really would have helped against the Eagles, who played very heavy against the Ravens. So
yeah.
Would like to see that be available.
Yeah, but you have to play with who you have, and the fact that they don't have a third safety, a true third safety, is a bit of a problem, because then, you know, you could, if you look at what the Chargers did to the Ravens a couple of years ago when they had, like, you know, basically a team of safeties playing against Lamar, and it really kind of shut the Ravens down. We don't have that luxury right now, because people are always saying, why don't we do what the Chargers did? Well, because the Chargers had the talent to do it. They had, you know, Derwin James and company. You had all these, you know, a plethora of talent in the safety position and defensive backfield. We don't have that right now. We've had, I don't know why we struggle with this position, but it's been a while. You've had, you know, from the disappointment, like a Matt Elam, to Earl Thomas, you know, just imploding. And now you had these two this year. It just, I don't know why this position is so difficult. We have probably the best safety to ever play that position in Ed Reed. And now you got Kyle Hamilton, who's, I think he's going to be a defensive player of the year candidate for the rest of his career. But you can't, it's not, you need more than one person, obviously.
You know, it's an interesting point that you make with regard to Jackson in particular, because Eddie Jackson now came to the Ravens. And first of all, he hadn't played well the last 4 years. And I got a lot of feedback from people who thought it's a really low risk signing. And I kind of was buying into the notion that the Ravens could reduce his role from a true half field, sorry, full, true single high free safety to a guy who would just have a split field role. It's a lesser responsibility. You could explain that to people from your background, but it's a lesser responsibility, and maybe he could excel at that where he kind of failed at being a free safety in Chicago. But there is risk with that. But first I want to talk about the difference from playing single high to being a split field safety.
Oh, it's tremendous. I mean, you've got to be. I mean, I remember our single high. We had a very good free safety in college, who's a defensive captain. But he just had a tremendous range, which you have to do. You've got to be able to, even if you're not going to be faster than everybody, but you have the responsibility of the entire field, and you've got to have sense of where the ball is going. When you split the field in half, and you have two high, like in the Tampa 2 defense, it makes it so much easier. Because you're only responsible for half the field, and you can certainly cover that and stay with whoever comes your way. It's a whole different position. And I see Jackson, I don't know if it's because he had more years of service that he no longer could be that effective as a single high safety, but he wasn't. He just didn't have it anymore. But it definitely makes it a lot easier. And then there's, of course, you know, the rotations do help, where sometimes you'll have these guys and if you have a too high safety, you get a chance to come up. You know, they'll rotate a cornerback into one of those safety slots, have the safety come down into, you know, the cornerback slot. And it's just a lot of movement that actually helps guys who are just, that don't have the range to play, you know, that one high safety.
All right. So the risk point I wanted to get back to is this. Just because somebody is a vet min contract, it doesn't mean there's not risk. And Jackson wasn't quite that. He had a little bit of guaranteed money, which further complicated the situation in terms of what was happening with the Ravens. Sunk cost, but still complicated the situation. The problem is you don't have an unlimited number of roster spots, and you don't have an unlimited ability to fix a problem if the risk you take doesn't work out. So when Jackson is on the team, doesn't play well, even though he was cheap, it doesn't mean he's easily replaceable mid-season. And the Ravens have found this. I mean, they've gone out to the street and tried to get Darryl Worley and other players.
Yeah.
And it's just, they don't have a good answer. And when they do have a good answer, it's robbing Peter to pay Paul. It's taking their two best slot cornerbacks and moving them back to the back end to play safety because they don't have an answer.
Yeah. And to make things worse, you saw Geno Stone have a pick six yesterday, which really kind of, stuck in my craw. I'm like, oh, we, you know, I know people weren't so sorry to see him go, but I liked him, and I just think we could use him right now, but we don't. So you work with what you got.
Yeah, he hasn't had a great year, but I would have liked to have him for the split field roll over Jackson very easily, and that would have maybe made it easier to get through this point. The other guy that I really like, who they gave a very brief tie to, and it did look like he was not quite as quick anymore. Was Darryl Worley, who really played well for the Ravens last year and had, you know, for several years, the Ravens had kept him around and made all of these like magician-like transactions. They had 18 transactions for him 1 year, which means what that tells you is they really love the guy.
Yeah.
They really want him to be around, and they're trying to find different ways to shell game him around the roster. But they just couldn't seem to find a spot for him. And I don't know how Worley would have played this year if you were on the Ravens, but I don't think he could have played worse than Jackson. I don't think it's likely anyway.
If you just look at the recent history with safeties between, let's say, Earl Thomas, Chuck Clark, Geno Stone, we've gone through quite a few of them who just aren't here anymore. And then you strike gold with Kyle Hamilton, which is fantastic. I know a lot of it's funny how many people did not like that pick, because there were other people that they wanted. There was some receivers that, you know, that people thought should have jumped on in that draft. I mean, obviously it's worked out, but they've had challenges at safety position, despite how good the defense was last year and how much it turned it around right now. Again, it's just knock on wood that Washington stays healthy, because I think he's helped a lot.
Yeah. And it was, who's the Colts 5'8 safety who was there for a
Sanders.
While. So,
Bob,
yeah, Bob Sanders. Sanders. Yeah. So he was great, but it's just, we could never depend on him.
Yeah. Yeah. But he was outstanding. Yeah. I mean, I used to speak in Indianapolis every year, and every day you go out there, and everyone's wearing 21 jerseys. Mm-hmm. And it's unusual to see a safety. Well, it wasn't with Ed Reed, but I mean, that's how popular he was, because he was so talented.
So we talked about the inability to find a spot for Simpson in some of the package work that was done. I don't know if I finished the packages, but it's close enough. Go to the article if you want to read the rest about the packages. I did think it was a little strange they didn't try and get Simpson in the game earlier than they did, even if it's some sort of package rotation. It's really, this is kind of a statement about where Simpson is on the totem pole of linebackers, to a degree that maybe they want to send that message. Maybe it's a practice harder message, or maybe it's a you're not where we want you to be message, but it seems very strong.
It's a message. It really is. It's a message, particularly the fact you play the Giants. I thought if you ever want to give this guy some, you know, some looks, you know, if you want to build his confidence back, you want to, you know, see what he can do, you know, things that you've had him work on that you've been, you know, not happy with. They didn't do that. He was completely absent until the end of the game. And I was wondering myself, because I really thought he was going to fill a queen spot and fill it nicely. So I was a little surprised to see that. Now you see, you know, Board and Harrison.
Yeah, Queen's not having a great year, by the way. No matter what the Steelers fans would tell you, he's missed a ton of tackles. But you know, it's definitely, in this case, he's probably 90% of the player at 5% of the price. It's not quite, no, it's not quite that low. Let's call it 11% of the price for Simpson. But it's obviously a lot cheaper to have him.
Yeah.
Not really impressed with Desmond King in this game. Now they did use him to rush the passer. They used him. I thought that the defensive pass interference against him was fairly ticky tack. He barely touched his jersey. It's more like, and you could speak to this. I always talk about cornerbacks keeping their hand on a wide receiver, right, not because they want to push him, but just because they want to keep track of him.
You want to know where he is. Yeah, and that's common too, and it's something that's never called, where you want exactly that. Like you can't just keep your eyes locked on a receiver. You got to see where the quarterback's eyes are. So you're trying to look at the quarterback in the backfield. You do want to keep your hand on the guy you're in coverage with, just to see where he is in relation to you. And sometimes you take a little jersey, you know, especially if the official's, you know, is on the other side of the receiver and really can't see it. So you grab a little jersey just to hold on to him for a second. But I thought there was some really, like you said, ticky-tack calls with that, because that stuff is often let go. And it just, again, I don't know if it's that crew, but I just, 12 penalties was like, that was a lot, man. It's, yeah. 12 penalties is a whole lot.
The neighbors on the left sideline DPI, the one that was deep right down by the goal line there, I thought was a tremendous flop job by neighbors. It's like, first of all, it's chest-to-chest contact. It wasn't like he ran through the guy. It was actually Stevens just
– oh, I know. Yeah.
Being a kind of a close, slow-dancing partner for neighbors down there, and the chest hit, and all of a sudden Moses Malone in the paint getting –
he got blown up. I didn't think it was interesting at all, because first of all, you both have – people know you both have right to the football. Sometimes when guys stop, your feet will get tangled, your chest will bump, whatever it is. That's not what PI is meant for. You know, DPI is meant for an intentional interference where you're preventing the receiver, who usually is when you're beat. You know it's, well, I'm going to take the penalty because he's going to have six if I don't. So they'll take a grab. They'll take a flagrant foul. That was not. That was really not.
All right, Ed, outstanding. Always love talking football with you. Love whenever we get a chance to talk on the radio. Anything you want to plug or talk about the Big Bad Morning Show? Anything else?
No, I just hope people tune in. I mean, we like having you on the show a lot. You're one of the – we get a tremendous amount of positive feedback from the listeners about you. And it's just – it helps us a lot because, we all have different styles. And not always very technical. Sometimes we're just reading statistics and stuff. But it's nice to have you on the show to provide a lot of real in-depth analysis. It just helps – it helps us be better. And I hope people tune in when you're on. I know they do. So, as I've said, I've gotten feedback from friends and just, random listeners alike, that it adds a lot to the show. So I hope people do tune in. And actually, coming up, we're going to have a lot of, if you think about next week, we'll be talking about the Steeler game, and then you'll be talking about the Texan game, like back-to-back days. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a real football rich week coming up in this town.
Yeah, this will be 10 days in a lot of ways that define this season for the Ravens, getting through the end of this Texans game. You know, one of the nice things, we didn't really mention this coming up, but the Texans could be in a position where they've won the division already, and I would really love for that to be true when they play the Ravens. If they have to beat the Chiefs for it to happen, or the Colts have to lose. I think those are the two possibilities. If either of those happens, then they've got the division won. And I'm not sure how much they view the value of the 3 versus the 4 seed. And, if you're talking about the Steelers and the Ravens both giving them trouble for that 3 seed, just the chance of winning it is already kind of low. So I would think that this may be a game where, short week and whatnot, they might rest some players or hold out some guys who are close.
Yeah, no, I can see that happening easily. I think the Ravens were a better team than them anyway. Mm-hmm. But if they rest some players like Nico Collins or, I don't know, Stroud.
Stroud, why not?
give him a break. I mean, save him for the postseason. So, if they could actually have give some guys some rest, because they do want to, if they have the division clinched, why not?
All right, Ed. complete pleasure talking with you. Other folks out there, thanks for listening again. And as always, if you point one new friend to this show, we'll really appreciate it. And if you know an older guy who doesn't really download podcasts as much, and I know I fall into that category, show him how to play it directly off the website. Ed, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Home Study.
This time of year, a good hoodie is absolutely essential. And the American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime. With timeless style, heavyweight fleece, and durable details, you can depend on it for years to come. Snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life, the American Giant Classic Full Zip, and save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use code CLASSIC24 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Code CLASSIC24.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.